To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min football family. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Happy Sunday from the top of the league, at least for now. At the time of recording, Arsenal are sitting top of the pile, having beaten Brentford yesterday in what was a really, really frustrating game overall, I have to say. I have to admit that on around about 75, 80 minutes, I maybe started to lose the faith. It just felt like it wasn't going to be our day. The nature of the goal that we conceded, the gamesmanship that was on display from Brentford, they would argue that there was a bit of gamesmanship on our side of things as well. And we'll get into the Kai Havertz controversy, if you like, a little bit later on in the program. We've got so much to unpack after another emotional evening at Emirates Stadium. And I said in the build-up to this game that all I cared about was us getting the job done. It didn't matter how. It could have been by hook or by crook. It wouldn't have mattered an inch. Like, all we needed to do was get the 3 points on the board so that today we could sit down, we could watch this fascinating game between Liverpool and Manchester City. And whichever way it goes, and, you know, all of us, I think, have our preferences as to how this game goes, etc., etc., we'd be able to sit and watch it without any feeling of regret. If Man City go and win it, they go and win it. If that's not what you want to happen, you know, not ideal then in your eyes, but we'd have got our 3 points on the board, and that's kind of the main thing. And if Liverpool go and win it, again, we've got our 3 points on the board, so there could be no regrets. So you can sit back, you can kick back, and you can watch that game in peace. Big shout out to everybody, of course, as well, celebrating Mother's Day today. Happy Mother's Day to all the amazing mothers out there, to my mom, to my grandmother, to my wife, especially, who I don't know how she does it, man, putting up with two kids and me. Hats off to you. And to her grandmother as well, who's been a rock for her and for my kids as well. So, yeah, to everybody celebrating, happy Mother's Day. Hope you're all good. Hope you're well. Hope you're having a nice day. And how nice of them, or how nice of the Premier League to schedule some blockbuster fixtures on your special day. Okay, let me say a few hellos to some of you joining us in the live chat. If you're joining us on YouTube, please do leave a like on the video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. If you're joining us via X, because we're streaming live on X today as well, again, please leave a like, retweet, or repost, whatever they call it nowadays on X, and come over to the YouTube channel if you're not already subscribed, because you'll get daily Arsenal related content right here. On this episode, we're going to break that victory over Brentford down. As I say, we're going to analyze Arsenal's opening goal. We're going to analyze Aaron Ramsdale's mistake. Thank God it didn't prove too costly in the end. We're also going to talk about Kai Havertz. We're going to talk Martin Odegaard. We're going to talk Gabriel, and we're going to talk Ben White, who I certainly think deserves his flowers after yesterday. We'll break down all the key moments, and at the end, we'll bring you some player ratings as well as taking your thoughts and questions from the live chat. Big hello to everybody. Hello to Tom, to Temi, to Afsa, to Clocken Seb. We've got the Canterbury Gooner. We've got Damien Kelly, who says, hashtag Greek time. I never start on time. And it is Greek time. Robert says, still lighting the barbecue. Do you know what? I considered it. When I woke up this morning, I considered it. And then I decided against it. And I went and got something else for us to cook instead. And I'm glad now that I took that decision, because it is chucking it down outside. And I really don't fancy standing out there all day. Callum Ferguson says, it's Mother's Day. Let Harry be late. The boss comes first. Absolutely. Absolutely. Big hello to Sooty as well, who says, morning, Harry. What a beautiful morning it is. Come on, you Gunners. Absolutely. Big hello to everybody else as well, because I don't want to miss anybody out. So I'm going to do a blanket one, and that way, you know, we can get into the content of the show as well. Okay, let's start off then by discussing the starting lineup, the team that Mikel Arteta went with in order to try and overcome Thomas Frank's Brentford. Okay, so Mikel Arteta was forced into making two changes. One being Aaron Ramsdale in for David Raya, and that's due to David Raya's ineligibility for this fixture because, of course, he is still technically a Brentford player and Premier League rules prohibit you from playing against your parent club. So there was no choice to be made there. Carl Hein was never going to play ahead of Aaron Ramsdale. It was always going to be Aaron Ramsdale in goal, and he'd have had time to prepare for that fixture as well. Possibly his last game in an Arsenal shirt. We'll come on to talk about him in a little bit more detail a little bit later on. And the other change was Leandro Trossard in for Gabriel Martinelli. Now, I'm a little bit confused, I have to say, as to what the situation is with Gabriel Martinelli, because Tom Canton, really good friend of mine, check out the Gunner Talk TV, he reported that after the game, he saw Gabriel Martinelli walking through the mix zone on crutches, which I don't doubt for a second, by the way. That's not what I'm saying here. I asked Mikel Arteta shortly after Tom had put that tweet out in the radio interview if he could provide me with an update on Gabriel Martinelli and if he was hopeful that Martinelli would be available on Tuesday. And he said, "We're positive." Now, I know he said that about the Burnley game, about the Brentford game, I beg your pardon, and he missed out. But he said that again about Porto. So were the crutches a precaution? I don't know. The fact that he's on crutches doesn't look good. We were told that it was a cut. Do you need crutches if you've got a cut? How bad was this bloody cut? I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. But he seemed optimistic and positive about Martinelli's chances of making the game. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I really don't. I don't know whether he will be available, whether he won't be available. If he's walking out of the stadium on crutches, then I'd say that it's most likely that he's not going to play and he's not going to feature and he's not going to be ready. But hey, so those two changes were enforced. I'd have liked to have seen, in an ideal world, maybe Jorginho left out of the starting 11 because obviously, you know, we play Porto on Tuesday and I think somebody like Jorginho and the fact that that then allows you to kind of let Kai Havertz stay in the centre forward position and let Declan Rice off the leash, if you like, and let him push into that eight position and where you see him get into the box we're going to talk about in a minute. I think we're going to need that to break down FC Porto on Tuesday. And my concern and reservation, having thought about it after somebody raised this in the comments the other day, fair play, Jorginho playing three games in a week, is that a bit much for him? I think maybe in an ideal world, the plan would have been yesterday, look, let's get our lead. Let's establish ourselves in a comfortable position. And then maybe you can take Jorginho off with half an hour to go and save his legs a little bit, protect him a little bit, and maybe bring on Thomas Partey to give him an opportunity to build up those minutes. But the game state didn't really allow that. And I know that Partey came on later on in the game. But I think the hope would have been that he'd have come on earlier had things been going differently. But it was so intense. It was so finely poised. It was so finely balanced. I guess Mikel Arteta probably felt that he couldn't take that risk. I do want to focus on each of the goals individually, and I want to start off with the Declan Rice goal because I think this is evidence again of some of the points that we've been highlighting on this podcast recently. So let's have a look at the Declan Rice opener, which set Arsenal on their way to what at the time felt like it might be a quite comprehensive and quite comfortable victory. We know that wasn't the case in the end, but let's have a look at that Declan Rice goal. Okay, let's cross over to YouTube. Again, remember, I can't show you the actual clip. I have to show you the sort of the screenshots. A little bit annoying, but it is what it is. We know about the copyright rules and all that stuff. It's just the way it goes. Okay, so this was in the lead up to this goal. Okay, so Ben White gets the ball in this deep position and he looks up and he looks to cross it in towards that far post area where Arsenal have managed to create themselves a little bit of an advantage. So we've been talking a lot in recent episodes and on recent shows about how Arsenal like to attack with a back five. And we talked about why Sheffield United really, really struggled with that. They played with a back four, which meant we always had a spare and extra man. And that made it really, really easy for us to cut through them. Brentford were never going to fall into that trap again. Thomas Frank is far too astute, in my opinion. And Thomas Frank has always tended to play with a back five in big games anyway. So I didn't expect anything different today. It was a back five from Thomas Frank, along with three midfielders in a really kind of narrow formation, protecting that back line as well. So Brentford always had plenty of bodies back behind the ball. In this situation here that you can see on your screens, and for those of you listening on audio, bear with me, I am going to explain it as best as I can. Arsenal are in position again with that front five. You can see Leandro Trossard at the far post. You can see Declan Rice making a move in towards the edge of the penalty area. You can see Kai Havertz occupying the centre forward position. Odegaard on the right. He looks like he's coming short at the moment. And then you've got Bukayo Saka holding some width on the right-hand side. And it's Saka, if you go back a little bit further, who rolls this ball into Ben White's feet. Now, when Ben White looks up, there's a really clever piece of movement here from Martin Odegaard, where he comes towards the ball. And in doing that, he's brought two Brentford defenders with him. Okay, have a look at Martin Odegaard's position. He's brought two Brentford defenders out towards the ball with him, because everybody knows that you can't afford to let Martin Odegaard pick up the ball in that type of position and let him turn. So how do you stop that? Well, you send a couple of players out, you try and close him off from both sides, and you prevent him making further moves. But what that does is takes away Brentford's man advantage. Now, if you look in behind those two that have been attracted to Martin Odegaard's bit of movement, now we've got a 3-on-4. So it's not ideal still. You'd still rather have the extra man. But 3 versus 4 rather than 3 versus 5 or 3 versus 6, you stand a much greater chance, don't you, of getting to the ball. And then it's about the quality of the cross and the individual desire from someone like Declan Rice to get on the ball. You can see he's just in behind his man who's sort of got his back to him. You can see that the player currently in the right back position will be keeping an eye on Declan Rice, but also knows that Leandro Trossard's on the outside of him as well. And this is how you cause chaos and you cause pandemonium. And it's a really, really good delivery in from Ben White, which leads to the cross. And then Declan Rice meets the cross. And then Arsenal wheel away in celebration and Arsenal take the lead. So again, Arsenal utilizing that front five that we keep talking about. And the clever piece of movement from Martin Odegaard just takes a couple of Brentford players out of the equation, which makes it a more advantageous situation for Arsenal. And Declan Rice has the desire, the power and the quality to put the ball in the back of the net once he gets into that position. It's really, really brilliant stuff. If we take it on a little bit further, we'll go to just before halftime when Aaron Ramsdale makes a really, really bad error. It is a really, really bad error. So the ball is played back to him by Gabriel. And Johan Visser, to his credit, he does brilliantly, I think, to you know, scamper towards Aaron Ramsdale and try and make it difficult for him. And Aaron Ramsdale's receiving the ball here. Now, Aaron Ramsdale has been quite good with the ball at his feet at times. But when you bring somebody in a team or into a team after a long period out on the sidelines and they lack rhythm and they lack the habit, essentially, of doing that week in, week out, there are going to be times where they get it wrong. Okay, everybody was talking about this maybe being Ramsdale's last game, et cetera, et cetera. You were always going to find an Aaron Ramsdale that was below the peak Aaron Ramsdale, the Aaron Ramsdale that we became used to and accustomed to during last season. He came in at Brentford back in November in the Premier League and he looked shaky as anything in the first half, made a couple of good saves in the second half. And it was a similar story this time around as well. And it really does come, I think, through a lack of rhythm and a lack of sort of, you know, game time. You know, it's one thing doing this on the training ground. To do it in a real match situation and have a striker bearing down on you, it is a completely different thing, isn't it? You can't replicate that kind of intensity. But look, the ball, the ball comes to Aaron Ramsdale here, and I just want to take it on a touch here. Let me see. So this is the key point for me. So hold on a little bit more. There we go. So Aaron Ramsdale takes that touch. Now, everybody will say, why did he take a touch? Why didn't he just clear it? No, because the point of trying to play out from the back and the point of signing goalkeepers who have greater distribution powers is so that you don't give the ball away cheaply, right? So if Aaron Ramsdale just swings a boot at that and clears it up the pitch, you or I might be quite content with that and quite happy with that, given what eventually unfolded. But Mikel Arteta is not asking that of Aaron Ramsdale or David Raya. Whoever plays in goal is required to be a part of our build-up. And so I don't think anybody, and especially not Mikel Arteta, would have had an issue with him taking the touch. The problem comes here, okay? So he's taken the touch, and what he has to do now is he has to clear this ball out to the right-hand side. That's what he has to do, okay? You have to do it nice and early. You look up, you know, looking at Ben White, is that a ball that you want to play with Keane Lewis Potter there kind of within distance of closing him down? Do you want to try and go in between the two strikers and go into Odegaard, who's dropping into midfield? I'd say no, because you don't want to give the ball away cheaply, especially in a central position. You should be just clearing this long, but you should be doing it out towards the right-hand side. Why? Because you're being closed down from your left. You're being closed down from someone who is coming from that particular direction. And by playing it right, you're giving yourself the greatest chance of avoiding that kind of coming together and that deflection that eventually saw the ball go in the net. And if you take it on a little bit further, you can see here that William Saliba had dropped all the way back to the byline to give Aaron Ramsdale an angle to play out from. So Aaron Ramsdale needs to have his head up, needs to have his eyes open. And when he gets the ball and he takes that touch to his right, he should be either clearing it long out towards the right-hand side, nice and early, not dwelling on it, nice and early, or he should be playing that angled pass to William Saliba. And if you play that early enough, there is no way on earth that Johan Vissa is blocking that. But that little bit of hesitation, it just allows Vissa to get back. Ramsdale, I think, loses track of where Vissa is when he's kind of caught in two minds as to what to do. And Vissa makes the block and into the back of the net it goes. And it was a really, really costly error at a really, really key point in the game. And I remember sort of sitting there at the time thinking, what have we done? Like, honestly, like, what have we done? We're cruising in this game. We're flying. We got the breakthrough goal. Okay, we haven't managed to find a second yet, but we're in complete and total control. After Brentford had maybe a 5-7 minute spell before we scored, I would say, where they looked actually quite good and they looked like they were going to, cause us a few more problems than perhaps we'd anticipated going into the game. But to give that goal away on the stroke of half time was a body blow, but also for it to be Aaron Ramsdale in what could be his last game in an Arsenal shirt was really difficult to take. What I loved was that Jorginho, and I think it was Gabriel, ran straight over to Aaron Ramsdale to sort of say, chin up, head up, mate. Look, it is what it is. You know, we're going to put this right for you. We'll sort this out. Don't stress. Don't panic. We'll deal with it. And that was good to see, that kind of unity and togetherness and team spirit. Lots of people then at the end of the game were talking about some of the saves that Aaron Ramsdale made in the second half. And listen, you know, they're good stops. I do think that the quality of those saves is being overplayed a little bit in order to try and kind of paint Aaron Ramsdale as some kind of hero. He wasn't a hero yesterday. He made a really, really bad error on the stroke of half time that could have been really, really costly to our title aspirations. He made a save after nearly getting caught out by Ivan Toney, who, to be fair to him, you know, thought really, really quickly there and tried to catch Aaron Ramsdale out with a sort of half volley. Really, really good effort from Toney. Not 100% sure that was creeping in, but it might well have done. And Ramsdale wasn't to know that. He was off his line and he just about got there. And then there was a save that he made where he tipped it over the bar from a cross in and it was a header. I think it was Collins maybe who headed it towards goal and Ramsdale tips it over the bar. Again, good stop, but world-beating stop? No, because it's straight down his throat and I expect him to save that. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't give Aaron Ramsdale any credit for those saves, but I do feel like the level of those saves is being overblown because people love Aaron Ramsdale and they want to make sure that he's not seen as playing his last game in an Arsenal shirt and being a bit of a liability. And I don't want that for Aaron Ramsdale, but I also think this is a prime example of what happens when you're loved by a fan base in comparison to someone over whom the jury is still out. You know, when it comes to Aaron Ramsdale, even when he makes a howler, most people will look quite hard and try to find a positive to kind of cover that up with. And that's what you should do as supporters. You should be behind your players. But I just think it's in stark contrast to how we analyze other people's errors. I.e., had that been David Raya, nobody would have been saying, oh, but he made a couple of good saves afterwards. Everybody would have been saying, why did we bring this guy in? He's not good enough. What a waste of money. We should have kept Aaron Ramsdale, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just, for me, it highlighted the difference in the perception of the two goalkeepers. So, yeah, just wanted to touch on that. Let me know your thoughts as well. There's loads and loads and loads of comments coming through at the moment. We'll take a few of those in just a minute. In fact, let's take this one from Derek, who says, G'day, Harry, from Australia. What a game. Another nail-biting time. Ramsdale saved us in the second half. Not sure if Raya's positioning would have seen him save that shot from Tony. Just going back to the goal that we conceded, Gunner329 says Saliba was open. Absolutely. Sadiq says Ramsdale is not suited to Arsenal. Mistakes happen in the game. Unfortunately, that one will have consequences in the summer. I think his value is now lower. Imagine being a club interested in Ramsdale. I don't think so. Because I think that the key point was a point that I made, which I think that most people who, you know, maybe coach or you know, analyze the game and are operating in the game at a really, really high level will probably put a lot of that down to the fact that he's not been playing and a lack of rhythm and a lack of match exposure. I think that's what people will put it down to. When you do something every week, you become more comfortable. You become, it becomes second nature. And when you stop doing something, it can very, very easily disappear on you. And I think that's what's happened with Aaron Ramsdale, because yeah, there have been a few hairy moments with Aaron Ramsdale during his Arsenal career with the ball at his feet, but that was really poor. And that is the type of poor that I think only happens when you're rusty. And I think only happens when, you know, you haven't quite got your angles right. You're not in the rhythm. You're not in the zone, if you like, and you've come in and there's extra pressure because it is your one chance, one opportunity to prove to Mikel Arteta that maybe you deserve a place or to kind of make your mark before maybe you leave the club, which we think might happen come the summer. Yeah, we'll see. Jimmy Flo says, clear the ball, man. No need to overthink it. Sadiq goes on to say, I bet there were scouts in the stadium watching Ramsdale. Not a good look for Ramsdale and our club. I want a maximum transfer fee. Well, you can't say that his stocks just died off the back of that and then say that you want the biggest transfer fee. Zed says Ramsdale was pressured immensely. Nothing he could have done. No, I disagree with that. I think he could have done a lot more, and I think he could have done a lot better in that situation. It's a mistake, and I don't want to beat people up for mistakes, because we all make them in some way or another, you know, myself included. We all make lots and lots of mistakes in our everyday life, let alone in a 90-minute period where the whole world is watching you. But yeah, you're right to highlight that the pressure applied was really, really good from Johan Visser. And I think that Johan Visser's part in this will go under the radar a little bit, because we're all going to focus certainly on Aaron Ramsdale. Tom says the easy pass to Saliba was the right decision. You can feel the rustiness in his decision making. I'm happy he pulled two worldy saves afterwards to keep us in the game, to balance it out. See, I disagree that they're worldy saves. I thought they were good saves and saves that I expect any Arsenal goalkeeper to make. Paul James says, Harry, you're being harsh. Ramsdale's error was awful, but the two second half saves were class. All right. Flip it the other way around. Okay. If Ivan Toney scored that, if Ivan Toney's shot looped over Aaron Ramsdale and then dropped underneath the crossbar and hit the back of the net, what would you all be saying? Nobody would be saying, not from an Arsenal persuasion anyway, nobody would be saying, that's a great goal.
from Ivan Toney, the narrative would be, how the hell has Aaron Ramsdale got beaten from there? That's what the narrative would be from an Arsenal perspective. Just like last year when we went out of the Europa League to Sporting and Aaron Ramsdale was lobbed from just inside our half. Nobody went, bloody hell, what a goal that was. I remember arguing with people on here where I was saying, guys, look, he probably should do better, but bloody hell, that's a cracking goal. And people were telling me, no, Ramsdale's got to go. That's awful. It's terrible. It's really, really poor. The reaction would have been the same had that effort from Ivan Toney gone in. So if the narrative would have been what a glaring error that is, then how can you then give him the world of praise for saying, actually, that it, you know, he's managed to keep it out? No, there has to be some kind of balance. Do you see what I'm trying to say there? I think he should have saved that, and he did. Fair play to him. I'm not saying it's an easy save, but it's one I expect him to make. And the second one, the header, is a poor, poor header. It's right down his throat. He's got the whole goal to aim at. It's completely free. And he doesn't manage to sort of steer it either side of Aaron Ramsdale. If he does, then there's no goalkeeper in the world keeping that out. So, yeah, saves that he should have been making, in my opinion. And you might think that's harsh, and that's fine. We agree to disagree. Speaking of agreeing to disagree, I've got a clip that I'm going to show you guys a little bit later on with regards to disagreement that I had a little while ago. So anyway, look, at this point, it's 1-1 in the game. Couldn't see where the goal was coming from. There were times and there were periods where it looked like we had them up against the ropes, where we were forcing corner after corner after corner, but we weren't making much of them. You know, I can't remember Mark Flecken making too many saves. I can't remember Mark Flecken being called into too much action. Eventually, we got our breakthrough, and thank God for that. But I just wanted to spend a moment on the refereeing, on the officiating, on Brentford's tactics. I don't blame Brentford for turning up and wanting to disrupt our flow and disrupt our rhythm. Not at all. Because if I were a manager of an opposition coming to the Emirates to face a side that had scored 31 goals in 7 games or whatever it was, I would have done exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. I would have come there. I would have tried to make it difficult. I would have tried to frustrate. I would have wanted to create as many stoppages as I possibly could. And let me just grab my phone because I've got a statistic that I want to share with you guys with regards to this whole stop and start stuff, because I thought it was really, really, hold on a second. Where is it? Let me find it. 1 second. Here we go. Just find it. My mate sent it to me. There we go. Okay, so Sam Dean put this out. The ball was in play for less than 50% of tonight's match between Arsenal and Brentford. The total game time was 105 minutes and 1 second, and the ball was in play for 49 minutes and 26 seconds. So Brentford succeeded in disrupting the flow, killing the rhythm of the game, and making sure that the ball was in play as little as possible. Now, it's a legitimate tactic. Fine, no problem. My problem is with the officials not stamping it out. And I thought the official was just completely out of control. Just completely not in control is what I'm trying to say. He didn't stop things when they were happening, quite obviously and clearly. I think at times he was dishing out yellow cards too easily, which then created debate and arguments about things that, you know, probably were yellow cards, but he just showed a lack of consistency in what he was giving yellows for and what he was. My words are all muddled up. Let me try and articulate this in the best possible way. The referee, for me, lost complete control of the game. And at some points, he tried to really stamp things out by showing yellow cards nice and early. But then you have to follow through with that and you have to be consistent in that. And he didn't want to be consistent in that because he didn't want to take the big and the tough decisions, i.e. giving people second yellow cards. And that takes me on nicely to some controversy around Kai Havertz. Should Kai Havertz have been sent off yesterday? He went into the book initially for a challenge where he led with his arm. There was another kind of coming together with someone. I think it might have been Toney. I'm not 100% sure, where I didn't think he did anything wrong. But the one that Brentford were really upset about, and Thomas Frank was really upset about, was his dive, shall we say, in an attempt to win a penalty. So look, do I think that he's tried to win a penalty there? Yeah. I'd be lying if I said anything otherwise. I do. I think he was trying to engineer some contact, hoping that that would get his team a penalty. So if you turn up disrupting the game, doing everything within your power to stop it flowing, then players are going to take measures like that in order to try and gain small advantages. It was a really sort of, I thought it turned into quite a nasty game at one stage, and both sides were at it, right? So I don't understand why Thomas Frank is getting on his high horse. And I normally like Thomas Frank, but I thought his reaction to this was a bit much. Does Kai Havertz get fouled when he goes down? No, he doesn't. He's on his way down before there's even any contact. And once that bump comes, there's certainly not enough in that for it to be a penalty kick. Fine, no problem with that decision. Interesting, though, that nobody talks about the other two penalties that Arsenal should have definitely had, in my opinion. Arms across people's throats, shirts being pulled off their backs. We saw it all yesterday. So, Thomas Frank, if you've got a problem with what Kai Havertz did, why aren't you talking about the fact that your side were extremely fortunate, actually, not to have conceded not one, but two penalty kicks? So should we just leave it at that? The other thing is, in that moment, as sort of Kai Havertz went down and, you know, the whole crowd called for the penalty kick, as you would, I had a look at the referee and he was quite some distance away. And what he does is he jogs over towards the incident and he just delays. And he delays and he delays. And that delay tells me that the referee didn't know what happened there. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I even blame him for that. It's difficult to see through a crowd of players. It can be difficult to work out exactly what's gone on in a crowd of bodies. No problem at all. But the speed or lack of with which he jogged over to that situation, it told me everything I needed to know about whether or not the referee had seen that or not. He was waiting for somebody to help him out. He was waiting for a linesman. He was waiting for the VAR, maybe. He was waiting for some kind of guidance, some kind of steer towards, you know, a decision. And it didn't come. And so he went over and he dealt with the situation in the only way that he could, given those circumstances. If you didn't see Kai Havertz dive, you can't show the guy a second yellow card and send him off. Now, people would argue, well, that's where VAR should step in. VAR doesn't step in for second yellow cards. So are you suggesting that we should change the VAR rules at this point in the season just so Kai Havertz can be sent off? No, it's got to be, as Kurt puts in the chat, and this is absolutely spot on, crystal clear for you to give someone a yellow card for a dive. You have to be 100,000,000% certain that that was what happened. And there is no way that the referee in that situation, given what I've just said about his positioning, how late he turned up to the sort of scene of the crime, if you like, and his kind of manner, which kind of gave away to me, I felt that, you know, he hadn't really seen what's going on. You can't possibly just show someone not just the yellow card, but what would have been a second yellow card. So Brentford are probably a little bit unlucky there. They are, because I think that had a referee had a clear view of that, He might have booked Kai Havertz. I'm surprised that the linesman on that near side, who was much closer and certainly didn't have bodies in his way, didn't spot it. But obviously he didn't either. You've got to be dead certain to send someone off when it comes to a second yellow card and a dive. And we've seen it happen before, but we've also seen loads of incidents where it didn't happen. I didn't see the same kind of conversation and narrative when Jota dived against, was it Newcastle United to win Liverpool? A really, really important penalty. These things happen. And as frustrating as they can be when you're on the receiving end of them, I think you've got to look at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is that you can't send someone off for a dive or book them for a dive that is going to lead ultimately to a red card if you did not see it. And I'm certain that the referee on that instance didn't see it. But anyway, hey, here's what it is. Okay, let's analyze the winning goal. Big hello to everybody joining us, by the way, live at the moment across the platforms. There are over 1,000 people watching this stream live right now. That is mind-blowing on a Sunday morning, especially on Mother's Day as well, because I know everybody's got plans. I know everybody's really, really busy and stuff. And so I really appreciate you opting to spend some time with me here on the Chronicles of Aguna podcast this morning. If you are listening via YouTube, please leave us a like on the video. It really, really does help. In fact, let's check in where we're at on the likes. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can figure this out, because likes are so, so important for the algorithm, as they say. We've only got 93 likes on the board. Come on, guys. There's no reason why we shouldn't have 400-500 likes on the board. If you're watching us via X, please do leave a like on the video as well. That really, really does help. Give it a repost. Give me a follow as well. I'd really, really appreciate that. Make sure you subscribe to the pod on your favorite audio platforms, or, of course, over on the YouTube channel, as I mentioned. But anyway, let's take it on. Let's have a look at the winning goal, because Kai Havertz is getting all the praise, rightly so. You know, he's had a big, big impact again. Ben White is getting a lot of praise too, because Ben White played a massive part. It was his wonderful cross that led to the goal itself. But there's one point I want to make about this goal, because I think that this goal comes about because of some genius from Martin Odegaard that maybe for a few people has just gone under the radar. Let me just try and pause this at the right point. So here we go. I think that's where I want it. There we go. Perfect. Okay, let me share this with you guys so I can make the point here. So obviously, in the build-up to this, Arsenal have a move down the right-hand side, and Martin Odegaard tries to chip the ball into the penalty area, looking for the run of Bukayo Saka. And unfortunately, he's unable to pick him out, and the ball gets cleared out towards around about the corner of the box where Martin Odegaard was positioned. Now, in this screenshot, and I'll explain it for those of you that are listening on audio, the ball is midair. It's coming towards Martin Odegaard. He's around about the corner of the box. And most people here would think, my God, we are desperate for a goal. We really, really need to find this winning goal. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play the percentages game. I'm going to head this back into the mix. I'm going to put it back into the area where Saka is, where Havertz is, where Nelson is, where Jesus is, where Arsenal have a number of bodies present. That's what most players would do, but not Martin Odegaard, because he doesn't give the ball away cheaply. Martin Odegaard is far too intelligent a footballer to fall into that trap of sort of panicking, to lose all of his composure. He realizes that there is a corridor of space to his right-hand side. And he realizes that mid-air, from that position, he's unlikely to put in the kind of delivery that somebody can finish with a one-touch finish. It's not going to happen, right? You can head that back into Saka. What's he going to do? Bicycle kick it over his head into the top corner? What's Kai Havertz going to do? Nobody's going to get the time and space in that area to bring it down under control and turn and shoot. So he has the presence of mind to think, no, what I'm going to do is, I know that Ben White is to my right because he's always there. He's so consistent in the runs that he makes. And I'm just going to cushion it into the path of Ben White. And what we're going to do is we're going to build again. And that gives those in the penalty area an opportunity to reset, an opportunity to try and shake off the attentions of those players that are marking them. So if I take this a little bit further forward here, eventually Arsenal work it to the right-hand side. It comes to Ben White. He gives it back to Odegaard. Odegaard then goes with the little give and go with Ben White, who then, as soon as he rolls it inside, gets his head down and makes a run in behind the defence. When it comes to Ben White here, look at the situation in the penalty area now. It's completely different. And again, credit to Bukayo Saka this time, because his movement towards Odegaard has dragged a number of Brentford players out that way, again creating a situation where Arsenal don't have a man advantage in the penalty box, but they have a situation where they're in a much better position to hurt the opponent than they were when it was 5-on-2 or whatever. Now, it's again similar to the first goal, 3-on-4, and it's about the quality of the delivery, and it's about the desire to get there and finish and make all the difference. And Ben White's cross was bloody brilliant. Kai Havertz, really, really clever here as well, because he just checks the run. He just checks it and stops on the edge of the six-yard box. The defender has been sucked in and attracted to the ball. And when Ben White picks Kai Havertz up, beats the man at the near post, Kai Havertz is there. He gets off the ground really, really well, and he powers this header at Mark Flecken, who, despite getting something on it, just can't keep it out. It's a really, really good finish. But that goal came because Martin Odegaard had the presence of mind not to throw the ball back into the mixer, as people like to put it, and instead showed a bit of composure, showed a bit of calmness, and thought, no, let's build a move again. And him and Ben White combine again, and they make the opportunity. They create the overload on the right-hand side. And when they work it into the box, Kai Havertz, who is full of confidence at the moment, gets across his player, gets into that near post area and powers the header home. And what a big goal that could turn out to be. The character that this team has shown, incredible. The character that Kai Havertz as an individual has shown, incredible. Because for me, it must have been incredibly difficult at the start of his Arsenal career. Because everywhere he turned, he'd have been reading and watching and seeing and hearing things of, to the effect of, why did Arsenal spend 65 million on Kai Havertz? Blah, 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 blah. That's all we heard. Kai Havertz was a waste of money. Arsenal could have won the league if they spent that money better, as if, you know, we'd lost the league back in November, December. Instead, he's got his head down. He's focused on delivering for the team. He's built relationships. You can see that the confidence is there with the German now, and he is continuously impacting games. He is continuously, having the last say in situations. And, you know, it's all good scoring a couple of goals when your team are 5-0 up, 6-0 up, providing assists in those circumstances. But you need to come up clutch at times as well when your team really, really need you. And he did it at Brentford away. He's done it against Brentford again today or yesterday. It's as if he's got a bit of a thing when it comes to Brentford. But it's so good to see. And listen, I don't have a problem with people who had a different opinion on Kai Havertz from the start, right? You did need to scratch beneath the surface at the beginning to see what was good about him. I would be the first to admit that. I defended him loads and I got a lot of stick for that. And it was not because I just wanted to defend everything that Mikel Arteta does or says, or, you know, well, if Mikel Arteta does it, I'm a, what do they call him? What have they been calling me? Arteta's defense lawyer and all of that stuff. It's nothing to do with that. If I can genuinely see something in someone, then I will talk about it and I will defend them and I'll back my instinct and I'll back, my opinion. People have different opinions in football. It's a game of opinions, and that's partly what's so bloody great about it. So I don't have an issue with people having a different view to me. But I do have an issue with people disrespecting other people's views to the point where, not mentioning any names, nah, it's all right. You're going to see who it is anyway. I do have an issue with it when it's to the point of sitting on national radio when you're live streaming and mouthing that I am talking bollocks because I'm saying that actually Kai Havertz's movement's very good and I think that he's going to come good and I think that people are picking on him unfairly. And this was the morning after, this clip I'm going to show you now, this was the morning after we got knocked out by Liverpool in the FA Cup. So this isn't me being revisionist. This is me at the beginning of January saying this and basically being laughed at on national radio because I had a different opinion. Check this out.
Doing what it's supposed to, which is creating chances and limiting the opposition to very little, generally speaking, then you've got to just focus on building back the confidence up of those individuals and hoping that they come good.
Well, maybe, Harry, they shouldn't have gone out and spent so much on Kai Havertz and then they would be able to afford a striker right now. What about
circling back to Kai Havertz very quickly? I feel like him and David Raya are always the two that people go to when it's not going well for Arsenal. I think, you know, Kai Havertz's movement yesterday was very, very good. And I think Arsenal created a lot of chances because of the way he played the centre-forward role. Now, that's not to say that his finishing is good enough or it was acceptable, but he isn't the only one that missed chances yesterday. He isn't doing...
There you go. That was me basically defending the system, saying that going out and spending on a striker in January was completely unrealistic and never going to happen. Oops, that proved to be the point, didn't it? Because everybody in the Premier League struggled to spend due to the PSR rules. So I wasn't talking out of my backside, was I, on that? And I wasn't talking out of my backside when I said that Kai Havertz's movement was good and that he was getting into the right positions and that he was having a really, really good impact. And again, as I say, I don't have an issue. I don't have an issue at all with somebody saying, I disagree with you, mate. I don't think he's good enough, blah, blah, blah. I do have an issue with people mouthing he's talking pollocks on national radio. And obviously that video went out afterwards. And, you know what happens when those kind of videos go out. Well, yesterday was my opportunity to say, and I wasn't rude about it, football's a game of opinions. And whether I agree or not, I respect everybody's. When I defended Arteta's system, our attacking players, and Kai Havertz in particular, maybe, just maybe, I wasn't talking bollocks after all. 8 wins on the bounce, and whatever happens from here on in, nobody's going to convince me that this team doesn't have goals in it. To be fair to Mr. Stelling, he was a good sport because he did come back and reply last night. He said, agree, Harry. Hold on, I'll share the screen so you can see it. 1 second. Where is it? Oh, where is it? Here we go. After he was called out by Dr. Iron, is it, on Twitter? He said, Jeff Stelling, say something. He said, agree, Harry. They've been great, though not great today. Just goodish. Havertz done better than anyone imagined, me included. Enjoy it. He said the main difference has been Declan Rice. P.S. I love Arteta. And then I said, Havertz has come into his own, and agree, Ari Rice. He's been incredible. Long way to go and a few twists and turns still to come. Looking forward to tomorrow's huge one. All the best, guys. Because I don't wish ill on anybody just because they have a different opinion with me. I just took issue with, at the time, you know, somebody mocking me as if I don't know what I'm talking about, as if I'm talking from a, like, as if I'm talking out of my backside, basically, just maybe for effect. And the annoying thing about that whole incident, and we spoke about it at the time, was that I couldn't see the stream the other way. So I couldn't see the reaction in the studio to what I was saying. If I could see it at the time, believe me, I'd have pulled him up on it at that point. But I think yesterday was a good time to kind of shine the light on Kai Havertz's impact. And whatever happens from here on in, you can't say the guy's not having an impact because he is. And I wanted to make that point. And fair play to Jeff Stelling, because he then said, you are right, Harry. Suddenly the people who decided to buy Havertz seem visionary. I didn't see it, but was wrong. So yeah, fair play. But yeah, you had your moment trying to embarrass me on air. So that's mine back anyway. Okay, what else have we got to do? We talked about the character. We talked about the Kai Havertz redemption story. Odegaard's brilliance in the build-up to the goal. Mikel Arteta was speaking after the game, and he was obviously buzzing. He was trying to talk up the atmosphere on Tuesday night as well. I think he's expecting a big one and hoping that that can help us get over the line in that huge, huge game against FC Porto in the Champions League. Arsenal haven't been to the last 8 of the Champions League for 14 years. So there's an opportunity to achieve something special on Tuesday night. And he wants the fans behind the team to kind of support and help with that. We're going to take a really, really short pause. Then we're going to do some player ratings. And then we're going to take a few of your questions from the live chat. If you've got any questions, start getting them in now. Just pop a cue at the beginning of your question. It helps me pick them out from the crowd. And we'll go through a couple of those before we say our goodbyes. It is Mother's Day, and I am going to spend most of it watching football. So I probably need to spend a bit of time either side of the football doing like Mother's Day kind of things. So yeah. Anyway, back in just a moment. Okay, my player ratings for the victory over Brentford. Let's start with Aaron Ramsdale. I'm going to give Aaron Ramsdale a 6. The mistake would have taken him down to a 4 for me. The saves that we've referenced in the second half were good saves, not world-class outstanding saves, in my opinion. So I'm not going to prop his rating up to anything higher than 6. 6 is where I'm at on him. Ben White, I'm going to give him a 9. 2 assists, defended impeccably well, did everything right. And we're seeing the best of Ben White again, I think, since that Dubai trip. Maybe it was the tan. We know that Ben White does love a bit of tan. William Saliba, I'm going to give him an 8. I'm going to give Gabriel a 9 because I thought Gabriel was outstanding in the way that he battled with Ivan Toney and various others. It got really physical at some points, and Gabriel stood firm, stood his ground, defended really, really well. But the thing that takes Gabriel from an 8 to a 9 and why I've got him slightly higher than William Saliba is this. He was on a yellow card yesterday, Gabriel. And when we got into the latter stages of the game, there was a bit of a coming together with Ivan Toney. And I remember looking on and thinking, our next Premier League game is Manchester City. Do not get sucked into any of Ivan Toney's games, because that is exactly what he wants. He wants to wind you up. He wants to get you carded again, and he wants to get you sent off, right? He's trying to get under your skin. He's squaring up to you, etc., etc. And it's very difficult to find the balance between not backing down, because I never want my players to back down in situations like that. I think it shows weakness. I think it shows that you can be bullied. So I wanted him to stand his ground, but I also wanted him to make sure that he didn't cross a line and lose his head or see red and end up putting us in a sort of situation where we've got a disadvantage going to City. It's difficult enough going to bloody Manchester City and looking to take a result, let alone without one of your first choice centre back. So real maturity shown there. Jakub Kivior, I'm going to give Jakub Kivior a 7.5. I thought he was solid again, but not as good maybe as he has been in some of the recent games. And I don't know necessarily what that was down to, but 7.5 for me. Declan Rice will get a 9 for me as well. Brilliant first goal. Really unlucky not to score a second as well when his effort came off the corner of the crossbar and post. Jorginho, I'm going to give him a 7.5 as well. I didn't think he was as impactful in terms of the build-up play and cutting through the lines. Didn't do anything wrong, mind. A bit like Jakub Kivior, but just not quite as bright shining as he has been in recent weeks. So 7.5 for him. Martin Odegaard, I'm going to give him an 8. I didn't think it was Martin Odegaard's best game in terms of what he offered on the ball, but his work rate, incredible. I talked about his in-game intelligence in the build-up to Arsenal's winning goal. I thought that was really, really important. And you can see how much he just loves his team, loves the club, and really wants to succeed with us. So I'm going to give him an 8. Trossard, I'm going to give Trossard a 6.5. I didn't think Trossard was very good yesterday. I thought there were flashes in the first half where he looked like he could get into the types of positions from which he could hurt the opposition, but he just didn't really come off for him on the day. And I think Mikel Arteta was right to take him off when he did. Not quite as effective from that left-hand side as he can be. He is different to Martinelli, and I went into the game knowing that and thinking that I was going to get something different to what I get from Martinelli. So there were no real surprises there, but just not as impactful as he normally is. Saka, I'm going to give Saka a 7.5. Good, but not at his brilliant best, in my opinion. But that's what you need in a title race. You need a number of players that can step up. So if Saka's a little bit below it, but you know, a couple of others step up and really raise their game, then that obviously isn't as much of a problem. And then Kai Havertz, I'm going to give Kai Havertz a 9.5. I thought he battled so well up front all the time. I thought his runs in behind were really effective. I thought his link-up play was really, really good. He wasn't afraid of the physical battle that Brentford seemed to put on him. I thought he was a bit unlucky to go into the book in the first place. Maybe a little bit lucky not to get a second yellow card, as we've already discussed. But then he pops up with the winning goal. And, you know, talk about clutch, talk about impacting, talk about making a difference. Kai Havertz did exactly that. I'm not going to mark the subs because I don't think they were impactful enough, in my opinion, for them to get a special rating. Jesus was buzzing about, as he always does. Nelson brought some energy and some speed to our game. Zinchenko came on, and that was obviously a move designed to kind of get us on the ball a little bit more and hopefully, you know, carve open that Brentford side. But in the end, the goal came from the other side. Okay. Right. Lots of questions coming through at the moment. Questions about the Porto game. I'm going to leave those because we're going to do a Porto preview show tomorrow. So I'll leave those for now. Aaron says, is that a Bergkamp photo in the background signed? Yes, it is. I got this when I was a kid. Let me hold it up to the camera. There you go. I got this when I was a kid. And it was just a little photo, and I've put it in this like frame thing. I have had this probably since like, I want to say 1996 or 1997. So I would have been 6 or 7 years old. I've had this photo. I don't know how my old man got it, but he came home with a photo of Dennis Bergkamp signed one day, and he gave it to me. And it's been in my rooms or man cave ever since. So yeah, that is exactly it. Dennis Bergkamp signed, the king. Okay, let's see what else we've got. Kirunda says, would you consider starting Gabriel Jesus for Porto? Would Havertz play up top? It's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because I think we might actually need Jesus's kind of guile and sort of dribbling ability against a very well-drilled side. Look, if Martinelli is still not available after Trossard's performance yesterday, I'm not saying it was really bad, but it wasn't exactly inspiring. I would maybe consider playing Jesus from the left against Porto. I like Jesus from the wide positions. I really, really do. And I just think when you've got a player like Havertz, who's in the form that he's in, how can you drop him? How can you leave him out? Do you go a bit more offensive? Do you maybe leave Jorginho out and play with Rice as the six and then put Havertz and Odegaard in the midfield around him, knowing that Havertz is going to push on and get into that kind of second centre forward position? That's an option too. But I would consider trying to get Jesus into the team as well. And I think the only way really that you can do that is if you put Jesus on that left-hand side. And that will probably be dependent on whether Martinelli's available or not. George says, can you believe that White can't get a spot in the England team as a central defender? He becomes that good that I can't comprehend. He's become that good that I can't comprehend why Maguire is ahead of him. But as a right-back, Walker or Trent Alexander-Arnold are better. Yeah, I think, look, Ben White's not a traditional right back. Okay, we know that. He's doing a really, really good job there, but it isn't his it isn't his natural position. It's a position that he's kind of grown into and developed into. If I was the England manager, probably wouldn't pick him ahead of Carl Walker or Trent Alexander-Arnold either because of what they offer you offensively. Carl Walker's pace gets him out of trouble and gets England out of trouble a lot. But yeah, the central defender thing is absolutely bang on. He would be in my squad. He would be in my central defense. Him and John Stones would be my two centre-backs if I were England boss. But something's obviously happened there. We don't know exactly what because there's no way that Ben White's being left out for footballing reasons. Because if he is, that is just ludicrous, isn't it? Okay, let's take a couple more questions. What have we got? Wesbird says, who do you think is our most influential player right now and who is absolutely first choice on the team sheet? It's got to be Declan Rice, isn't it? Declan Rice in the two centre-backs. Obviously, you put Saka in there. There's a few players, but Declan Rice feels like the leader at the moment, the talisman, the guy that is so superior to most others defensively, but also offensively as well. What he's bringing to the team offensively lately is really, really impressive. And it's a side to his game that I didn't see, you know, prior to his arrival at Arsenal. And that would be to do with the management styles, the teams that he's in, et cetera, et cetera. But he's really come into his own and he's really improved on that side of things. So, yeah, Declan Rice is the one that jumps to mind first. George Lee says, hi, Harry. Last time we spoke, we discussed just how tough it is to challenge the Giants in Pep and Klopp. How well is Mikel Arteta doing in his first managerial job? He's competing with them. Yeah, absolutely. And this is the bit that gets overlooked when it comes to Mikel Arteta. People say he's this and he's that. Well, this is his first job. And yeah, he spent a bit of money, as all managers at big clubs do. But he's had to turn a pretty big ship that was sailing in the right direction around. And that's not easy to do, especially when you don't have the experience that maybe some of the other managers did. Pep Guardiola had plenty of experience and pedigree when he joined Manchester City. Jurgen Klopp too. So for Mikel Arteta to be able to turn this ship around and put us in a position where we are competing, it is massive. And I know people get frustrated with individual decisions and individual games and all of that. And that's going to happen, right? Because football is an emotional sport. I think it should never be lost on you that he's done wonders to get us to this position where we're now sitting down. When was the last time prior to last season, again under Mikel Arteta, where we sat down and watched a Liverpool Man City game worried about the outcome because it could have an impact on us? We're in that conversation now. We're in the equation, which is a huge, huge step forward. James Bond, this is going to be the last question, but I do really, really want to take this one because I noticed this at the time as well and I thought it was fantastic. Did you see that bump that Saliba gave Tony? It was the same as he did Haaland. Yes, it was in the first half. There was a ball played out towards the left-hand side. It was a long, high ball, I think, towards Tony. And Saliba just gave him this bump and literally sat Ivan Toney down on his ass. And then he controlled the ball and passed it to a teammate or something like that. And I remember looking at that and thinking, bloody hell, Ivan Toney didn't know what hit him there. William Saliba coming in from the back with a wonderful piece of defensive strength and then having the composure after that to then settle himself and move the ball on. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Guys, thank you so much for joining me as always. Really appreciate all the love. Well over 1,000 of you still tuned in with us, which is really incredible. If you haven't done so already, please do leave a like on the video if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening on audio, please leave us a review, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the audio podcast. If you're watching us on X, and I can see that right now on X, there are nearly 700 of you watching live, which is just wow. Please do retweet the video or repost it, whatever it's called. Give it a like, give me a follow, and also give the Chronicles of Aguna pod a follow. You'll find the handle in my bio. So if you click on my name, it'll take you to my profile, and at the top, you'll see TCOAG pod. Give that a follow as well. We'll be back very soon with more. Thank you as always for your love and support. Up the Arsenal. We're top of the league for now. We might not be a little bit later on today, but for the time being, let's enjoy it, and happy Mother's Day to everybody celebrating. All the best. Goodbye.